Thank you, Steve. 207. Yeah, raining hard. Raining moderately. I wouldn't say it's pouring. But you did. People have umbrellas out, and it was raining hard earlier. Right now, it's really foggy, really misty. It's not baseball weather, I'll tell you that. It is 207. This is John Williams live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Text to 312-981-7200, and at the end of this half hour, we'll catch up with the score on Handyman Poker. If you were listening in the last half hour, Steve and I each describing the Handyman projects that we've done over the last 72 hours. The question was, who won? This is the sort of thing Lou Manfredini would probably be best qualified to score for us, but today we'll let you just text John to 312-981-7200. And you can vote that way. So this nuclear option thing kind of has me scratching my head.
Yeah.
The nuclear or constitutional option, I'm reading from Wikipedia, is a parliamentary procedure that allows the United States Senate to override a rule or precedent by a simple majority of 51 votes instead of a supermajority of 60. An opinion written by Vice President Richard Nixon in 1957 concluded that the U.S. Constitution grants the presiding officer the authority to override Senate rules. I guess that...
So he would have been the president of the Senate then, right?
Affirmative.
He would have been vice president?
Vice president, right, yeah. But still, and there's something else in this article, which I've read twice and understand even less each time I read it, where it appears as if there's a constitutional issue. If you feel what, the Senate's doing something unconstitutional, then you get to invoke this? I mean, what's the point of requiring 60 votes?
The Republicans are calling it the constitutional option because they want to do it. And, you know, and they are allowed by the Constitution to do it. The Democrats are calling it the nuclear option because they want to make it sound really awful.
But they did it themselves in 2013.
Harry Reid in the Senate, when they had the majority, they passed a rule change because in the past you could block a judicial appointee with a filibuster. And the judges just weren't being approved. I mean, I think it happened under Bush's term, but it certainly happened a lot under Obama's where, you know, the Senate just wasn't moving on these judges. So Reid passed the thing and said, look, OK, we're going to require now a simple majority, 51, to approve a judge with the exception of the Supreme Court. We'll keep the old rule there. Well, Scalia dies. Merrick Garland is appointed. The Republican-controlled Senate won't even give him a hearing or meet with him. And so now the Republicans are in control. The Democrats are trying to do whatever they can, which really isn't anything. So they're going to sort of symbolically filibuster here and force the Republicans to change the rule for the Supreme Court, too.
Megan Hills joins us now. Megan Hughes, rather, the Capitol Hill correspondent for ABC, joins us to further educate me on this process and where we are today. Hi, Megan. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. I have to tell you, this is kind of a sad, we heard a lot of very sad statements about the nuclear option today. It seems like Republicans and Democrats are really sort of wringing their hands that this looks like where they will be headed by the end of this week.
Why are they sad about that?
Well, right. So the question here is, like, what are the stakes? What does it mean to invoke this nuclear option? And you're right, it does sound very, very scary. And what essentially it means is that a majority party can decide to push through whoever they want. Now, what that likely means is that judges and Supreme Court justices will get more and more ideological, and that more will be at stake every time there's a election in the Senate. So we'll see the partisanship that a lot of people in this country bemoan just be ratcheted up further. And we heard this from Senator Lindsey Graham on the right side today and from Senator Dick Durbin from Illinois saying, I love this place. It breaks my heart to find us in this position. But both sides kind of feel cornered at this point.
Well, Durbin wasn't going to vote for him either, right? Neil Gorsuch, that is?
That's correct. And it's important to make the distinction here on what the Democrats are doing. Now, they're not only saying we're not going to vote for Neil Gorsuch, we don't agree with his positions. They're also saying we're not going to allow a vote to continue. We're not going to vote to end debate, which is what a filibuster is. And we had a committee vote today just within the past hour, where they decided to move it forward. So we're going to have this showdown on the Senate floor by the end of the week, and we were going to have this vote on whether or not it should move forward to that final vote, and that's where they need the 60 votes. And that's, I mean, the whole idea here is that there needs to be some bipartisanship to pass something as important as a Supreme Court justice and confirm a Supreme Court justice.
I thought that the procedures were relatively set. I did not know they were that changeable. It sounds like you need 60 votes, and to override the filibuster.
That's right, and I haven't even used the word cloture. You should be very proud of me. But in 2013, the Democrats, you're right, did use this nuclear option, and now it means it's a lot easier for Republicans at this moment to get judicial appointments approved. Now, they preserved the Supreme Court. They did not use the nuclear option in 2013 when it came to Supreme Court justices. This would take that a step further and really, as I said, ratchet up the partisanship here in Washington.
But by what authority are they able to do that? I mean, aren't there some sort of concrete rules? I don't know if it's the Constitution I'm thinking of, but it seems to me like Democrats then or Republicans now should not, or vice versa, neither party should be able to change the rules of the game just because they don't like the way it's going.
It seems to be some kind of loophole that is allowed. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has mentioned it as a possible option, and he has been very, very firm that he is sure that Neil Gorsuch will be confirmed by the end of this week. We also learned from today's committee vote that advanced this floor battle that we're seeing brewing. We learned from that committee vote some of the numbers and how Democrats like Senator Dick Durbin are planning on voting on this, whether or not to filibuster. And it looks like that's where we're headed. It looks like Democrats will be filibustering based on what they've said so far. We've done the tally. We've done the numbers. Republicans do not seem at this moment like they're going to get to 60 votes. That puts Mitch McConnell in the position to use this nuclear option if he indeed believes that he needs to get this confirmation by the end of the week.
Are there Republicans that will vote against and Democrats that will vote for Neil Gorsuch?
There are four Democrats that said they would vote to advance his nomination to a final vote. Three of them said they would also support Gorsuch, but they needed a total of eight, and they're not going to get there.
Yeah. Huh. My number is 312-981-7200 if you have a question or comment about this. It seems to me like he's a pretty good guy. It seems to me like he is qualified. I think it breaks all of our hearts, Megan, when people see the senators or the congressmen just voting along party lines. What a coincidence. The Democrats don't like him and the Republicans do. You know what I mean?
Well, I'd also like to throw the name Merrick Garland in there, which has been kind of the elephant in the room. There's a lot of bitterness over President Obama's nomination and what the Republican Party did to President Obama's nomination. The fact that this seat has been vacant for a year. Democrats feel like this seat was stolen from them. Damage has been done. And so I don't think that this vote is entirely about Neil Gorsuch on its merits. Now, we heard from a lot of Democrats today that said, yes, I'm very, very angry, but I also have problems with Neil Gorsuch's record. We also heard a lot of Democrats say that during the confirmation hearings, they weren't satisfied that his answers were straightforward enough and that he was really just kind of trying to dodge really sharing how he believes and how he's going to make decisions.
Well, every smart person I talked to about that said that's the way he's supposed to answer those questions. He's not supposed to tell you how he would rule on waterboarding or abortion until those specific cases came before him. But agreed, it was very frustrating to see him say, Senator, I'm sorry, I just can't answer that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. But I do think if you've watched these hearings before, this is something that every nominee since Bork has tried to go forward. And that was a nominee from Ronald Reagan that got in trouble for saying too much during a hearing. So Supreme Court nominees generally try to say as little as possible during their 20 hours of testimony.
Well, they were certainly successful in that. One last thing, though. We'll never be able to answer this question, but suppose Merrick Garland had gotten his day and had gotten his seat and was on the court, and now this was somebody else's seat that became available. I wonder if then Democrats would play more nicely, if we wouldn't be at this sort of constitutional crisis, you know?
I certainly think that what went down here on Capitol Hill with Merrick Garland just garnered so much ill will and so much bitterness amongst Democrats, and I think that this has to be playing a part of what's going on today.
Yeah, I get into an argument with my friend Eric Zorn, who's a columnist here. He's pretty liberal at the Chicago Tribune, and he wants them to fight and stall and delay and do everything they can to keep Gorsuch from getting approved because he's still so angry about Merrick Garland.
Right, and I will say that, you know, in addition to the anger, there's also a lot at stake in terms of policy, reproductive rights, gay rights, campaign finance, things that are really critical to Democrats. And Gorsuch is 49 years old, so we're talking about someone that could serve on the court for 20 to 30 years, and then the icing on the cake being they feel like the seat was stolen from them.
Yeah, when I get to be king, we're going to have term limits for Supreme Court justices, but the paperwork hasn't gone through on that, Megan, so I'm not king yet. But you're terrific. I appreciate your time and expertise today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Megan Hughes is Capitol Hill correspondent with ABC. You may have something to say. I promise you I won't be able to shed any light on this. In fact, here's just the last paragraph on the wiki post about the nuclear option. In most proposed variations of the nuclear option, the presiding officer would rule that a simple majority vote is sufficient to end the filibuster of the debate. If the ruling is challenged, a majority would be required to overturn it. If the ruling is upheld, it becomes a precedent. This would end what effectively became a 60-vote requirement for confirmation on an executive or judicial nominee or the passage of legislation. Have no idea what I just said to you. No idea. I'm still confused by this thing.
You said Gorsuch wins, or you said Mitch McConnell wins.
Is that what ultimately that means?
No. Well, yeah.
I mean, there should be a rule. And you should, and if you want it to be 60 votes, make it 60 votes. If you want it to be 51 votes, then it should be 51 votes. And it shouldn't require any fancy language or rewriting of the rules. Once you have the rules, you have the rules.
There's the Constitution that says things, and the
right. So what I want,
the institutions write the rules within the Constitution.
Okay. And so, but I was under the assumption we had already done that. I thought there was a way to nominate. Wasn't there a Schoolhouse Rock episode about this?
Yeah.
It would seem to me like, and if there isn't, there should be. And whatever the Constitution says should be the parameters, you should have written the rules about that, and those will be the rules.
Well,
you can't change the rules.
The Republicans are saying, oh, aren't you sorry now, Harry Reid? You know, you changed the rules. But look, they were fixing a big problem then. You know, vacancies weren't being filled because you required 60 people because of this rule.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What do I always say?
Well, if you can't, I don't know what you always
elections
say.
Matter.
Yeah, elections matter.
If you win, you're supposed to be able to. Now, don't tell that to Merrick Garland because he should be on the bench right now.
This is a Robert. Robert, what was your question or comment? You're on the air.
You guys just hit it perfectly. I think that is the reason why you do have this option, is to eliminate a stalwart between two parties that aren't making decisions to get things accomplished. So when that occurs, then they in turn invoke this option. I think we should rename it, though, I really do, and we ought to call it the Reid Rule, because he was the one that introduced it, and he placed a large number of ideological judges in the courts.
As a result.
Now, and I also agree with Steve. Elections have consequences. I think I heard Obama say that on numerous occasions.
That's why I support Gorsuch. Sure. I mean, support Gorsuch because, A, I think he seems qualified, and, B, he is a representative of the will of the people that voted for Trump. Game over. That's it.
He's a solid guy. Nobody can dispute that.
Yeah.
They're angry because he didn't give them answers that they could go and attack.
No, they're angry because in the history of this country – Merrick Garland should have been put on the bench. And there, and that's a legitimate anger.
No, I get that. I get that.
I disagree with that. I think in the history of this company, our country, no outgoing president ever made a Supreme Court justice appointment.
How do you define outgoing president? I mean, to me, they're all outgoing. You're outgoing the day you walk into the office.
Here's the thing that everybody seems to avoid. They didn't make a big stink of it then because they thought Hillary was going to win hands down, and it didn't make a difference.
They made as much of a stink as they could, but I will disagree with you about the outgoing president thing. I mean, Garland was appointed with almost a full year left in Obama's presidency. Now, if it's a stain that the nuclear option has to be invoked, it's not a good thing. He deserved a vote.
It's 2:22:22 on my digital clock. We'll pause here. Thanks for the call. You may chime in too. 312-981-7200. By the way, a lot of you I know are still listening on to hear who won Handyman Poker, and we'll have the tabulation on that coming up on WGN.